never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan, be with you until a little bit before 8 o'clock, and we have a full house tonight. We are talking about all things herbal, including lavender. There are two festivals coming up next weekend. The Lavender Festival that takes place, oh my goodness, I am going to sneeze. I think it's the lavender. The Lavender Festival is taking place on June 14th and June 15th in Kenwood, and All Things Herbal is taking place next Sunday, June 15th, from 10 to 3 in the town square right next to the Sebastopol Farmers Market. So we've got six people here to talk about these events, and you know, if you've noticed, gosh, the lavender is gorgeous right now. The herbs are thriving. It's almost basil season. I think it's a great time to have this discussion. So let me start by welcoming this full house. We have Shelley Urian.
Hi, thank you.
From Sonoma Lavender. And we have Mary Bergen, who's chef for the festival, and also from Sur La Table.
How are you?
I'm okay, now that sneeze is over with. Leslie Gardner, director of the Sonoma County Herb Exchange, and also involved with the California School of Herbal Studies. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Leslie.
Glad to be here.
Monique Camp of Sophia's Garden. And Sophia's Garden is located in...
Sebastopol.
It is Sebastopol. Okay, I thought it was. I didn't want to misspeak. We also have Terry Toso, who is a board member of the Sonoma County Herb Exchange and operates Napa Valley Botanicals.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
See you at the farmers markets a lot.
Yes, I do.
And we also have a Peg Schaefer of the Chinese Medicinal Herb Farm and also Sonoma County Herb Exchange board member. And your farm is in Chilena Valley. Well, thanks so much to all of you for coming. Why don't we start just quickly with these two festivals. All Things Herbal is taking place on one day, June 15th. Who wants to jump in on this?
Well, I can talk about All Things Herbal, as I'm the one that's been coordinating it for the last 6 years. This is our sixth annual event, and it's turned into be a very popular little herb fair. It started out as being a way for the Sonoma County Herb Exchange to come up with some fundraising, but it was that people couldn't wait until September for the main herb festival, which was at the Santa Rosa Junior College, and people wanted something to come a little bit earlier than September. You know, they were raring to go. They wanted to get their herb plants. Mm-hmm. They wanted to get their herbal medicines, and so we came up with All Things Herbal. It's always been the first couple weeks of June. And it's a small fair, but it's at the downtown plaza, you know, Michelle, where the Sebastopol Farmers Market is. Mm-hmm. Right there in the downtown plaza across from Whole Foods. But there will be about 20 vendors, and there's a wide array of products that will be available.
You have both products prepared from herbs, tinctures, and I assume hydrosols, all that sort of thing, as well as herb starts.
All that. We'll have plants. Some of the plants are hard to find anywhere else. Some of them aren't found anywhere else. And a lot of different kinds of herbal medicines and cordials, elixirs, gemstone essences, all sorts of wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Will there be, among the people who are selling plant starts, will there be people who can sort of tell you what to do? I think that there's a myth that all herbs should be grown in the same environment. And I know from my own experience and from talking to other people, that's not really true. Some want one type of drainage, some want something else. So will there be experts on hand to talk about it?
Yeah, that's a good point, because actually both myself and Rose from Morning Sun Herb Farm in Vacaville is coming, and she's a very long-time herb plant propagator. And myself, I'll be there with my plants also, and I learned my craft from Lois Woolsey, who had Marquard Gardens, and they grew medicinal herbs for, I think it was almost 25 years that she was growing herbs in this area, and she taught me everything I know. So, and I'm at the farmer's market every Sunday, too, and so I do answer a lot of questions, and you're right, there are a lot of questions about, I think there's still a lot of people out there that think that growing some herbs are tricky, and so I am there to answer questions, as will Rose, and there will be people from the California School of Herbal Studies that will also be there that are very knowledgeable about the plants, too. So there'll be lots of people that can answer any of your questions, and almost everybody there is a plant buff anyway, and so even people that aren't selling plants can help you on how to grow the plants, because they've all grown them.
So that is June 15th, next Sunday from 10 to 3. Now, the Lavender Festival is taking place both days next week, on the 14th and the 15th. Want to tell us a little bit about it?
Thanks, Michelle. I always like to start talking about our Lavender Festival, about how our lavender business got started, which was a really fun, it's a very family, wholesome story. The owners lived in the South Bay, had a very successful marketing firm, and the Lavender Barn in Kenwood, where the festival takes place, was their vacation home. And being in a very high-powered marketing firm, the owners, Gary and Rebecca Rosenberg, would come up on the weekends with their children, small, and Rebecca was, like most people probably in the Bay Area, very stressed with what they had going on. And she would sit and just ponder what they could do with this land. So they have 5 acres. What do I do with it? They are surrounded by vineyards and didn't want to get into the wine industry. So Rebecca started researching the homeopathic effects of lavender. And being that she was incredibly tense and stressed, found that lavender was very soothing, very relaxing, got very interested in what it was able to do for her homeopathically, and started growing lavender. From that, they built their barn and started hand sewing sachets and pillows and peddling them to local retailers, one of our first retailers being Sonoma Mission Inn. And from that stemmed Sonoma Lavender. And we are very excited that our 9th annual Lavender Festival is coming up on June 14th and 15th, Saturday and Sunday. The festival is the only time of the year that we do sell to the general public. We have a marketplace, as well as demonstrations on how to grow lavender, how to dry lavender, how to use lavender, aromatherapy, how to cook with lavender. We have all things lavender. It's a sensational event. It's 2 days. It'll be from 10 until 4 at the owner's home, Gary and Rebecca. And what's very fun and very unusual about our festival is that you feel when you're there that you are a guest at a party. It's a lavender party. We just hang out, we cook, we have a chef that does culinary food. We're having cooking demonstrations this year, which will benefit the cost of the cooking demonstrations of $20 per person. It's a donation. Will benefit the Valley of the Moon Children's Home, which Gary and Rebecca are strong supporters. There's over 1,000 children every year that are taken out of homes, neglect, abuse, and they're brought out to the Valley of the Moon Children's Home. And the money will go to benefit them with activities and any type of needs that they have above and beyond their general care. We have our Lavender Barn store, which we do put our products that we manufacture, which is over 300 lavender-based products, everything from bath and body to lavender-scented robes to lavender-huggable animals to botanicals, are all on sale. And that is one of the only times during the year that we actually do offer our products for sale to the general public.
Great. And Mary, are you in charge of the demonstrations?
Yes, I am.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what to expect?
Sure. I'm going to be making some lavender brownies. Start off with dessert first, of course. And I'm also going to be making some chicken satays that are going to be rubbed with the same lavender mixture that's making you sneeze. And I'm also going to be doing some lavender and lemon scones. So we'll be doing a little bit of demonstration, mm-hmm. a little bit of talking, and mostly eating and having a good time.
Mm-hmm. About how many people attend the festival?
From past experience, I would say easily thousands.
Thousands, okay. And is there an admission? What's the admission?
It's free to attend. We do ask for a $5 parking donation, so pretty much anybody that can fit into a vehicle comes in. We have people that come from all over the state, sometimes by the busload, and literally they just unload and come and enjoy. Like I said, it's like a party at the owner's home and celebrating lavender.
It's interesting what's happened with lavender in Sonoma County. I remember in the early 90s, Sandra McIver at Matanzas Creek had put in 2.5 acres of lavender, and it was she was the first person, other than people growing plants here and there, really the first person to consider those possibilities. And that was right at the same time there was a growing awareness of similarities between Sonoma County and Provence. And Provence, of course, up in Grasse, huge, huge, huge acreage of lavender. It's the perfume center of France. So it's been interesting to watch what has happened with lavender since that very early spot. And they had a lavender festival for a while. I don't think that under Kendall Jackson's directorship, I don't think they're continuing it. If they are, they're not publicizing it quite as much as they used to. But that's it. The Sonoma Lavender Festival coming up next weekend, and all things herbal next Sunday.
Dilly, 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 lavender blue. Dilly, dilly, lavender green.
Lavender green.
If I were king, dilly dilly, I'd be a queen. Who told me so? Dilly dilly,
so
who told me so?
Who told you so?
I told myself, dilly dilly, I told me so. If your dilly dilly heart feels a dilly dilly way, and if you'll answer yes, in a pretty little church on a dilly-dilly day, you'll be wed in a dilly-dilly dress of...
I think there's lots of reasons to pay attention to anything to do with herbs, including lavender. And it wasn't all that long ago that if you were really lucky, you had a grandmother that whatever was wrong with you, she'd go outside and she'd pick something. It might even be something like poppy seeds. And she'd make you a tea and your headache would go away. My grandmother made, and I'm so sad that this recipe was never written down, my grandmother made a remarkable hand lotion. It didn't look like it. It was sort of the color of oatmeal, and it was fairly thin, but she would make it like once or twice a year and different size medicine bottles, and it would go to all sorts of people. And I still remember the smell, but I have no idea what was in it. And if you read any of the current literature that's out, I think it was a book that came out near Christmas last year, I think it was called Toxin or Toxic. If you look into the sort of chemicals that are on cosmetics and skincare products and all the things that are dumped in the American market because they're not used in the, they're forbidden in the European market, you know, it's a really good thing to look closer to home for somebody who's making your skincare products. And one I want to talk about, and just anyone jump in, please. I love hydrosols. I have a lavender hydrosol in my refrigerator. I'm very sad that the jasmine and orange blossom hydrosol that Mom's Head Garden was making, that she's not doing that right now because I love that one. But I love hydrosols. I keep them all over my house. Anyone want to weigh in on the topic of hydrosols?
Well, I could talk to that.
Great.
So Sophia's,
and this is Monique Camp of Sophia's Garden in Sebastopol?
Yeah. I developed my gardens with hydrosol in mind. So this is a biodynamic medicinal herb farm, Sophia's Garden, and I've planted probably about 30 aromatic plants. And I bought a still from Rosemary Gladstar, who ages ago had one, and it just kind of made the rounds.
And Rosemary, of course, was the founder of the
California School of
Herbal Studies.
Right, yeah. So it's been upgraded since then, and last year I did about 100 distillations, not all lavender, but lots of lavender, which I grow as well, lavender. We have clary sage, We've got angelica, we've got rosemary, so many varieties. And we are looking for people that enjoy it, as you have expressed. It's not so known, hydrosol.
No,
the oils are.
Yeah, I mention it to people now and then, and there's sort of this blank look.
Yeah, what do you do with it?
I'm actually going to jump in here.
Yeah,
and
please.
I would like you to explain to me what a hydrosol is.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
I was just going to.
Well, hydrosol is a secondary byproduct. When you do a distillation, primarily you're going for oil, lavender oil, clary sage oil. But the hydrosol is a secondary byproduct. So once you've separated out the oil, the water that remains has about 2% oil in it. So for young children and for senior citizens and for people who really don't have any serious ailment, but they just want some of the soul or the essence of the aromatherapy in their life, they can profit by using the hydrosol. So you just mist it around. You can cook with it and do all kinds of things, but primarily people use it as a mist.
One thing I find I really like about it is on a hot day, I have the lavender one that's in my refrigerator, so on a hot day, just a little spritz to refresh you, and then I use rose hydrosol every morning just because, almost like an astringent, but just really to spray a little moisture on my face, and I'll do that, you know, a few times throughout the day. They're not as strong as you say, so it's, and you're not getting oil on your face. You're just getting this little whiff of refreshment for your skin.
Sonoma Lavender does produce. We have a spray mist. It's fabulous. Uh-huh. We are very excited that our Bath and Body line has just been certified organic, and our spray mist is fabulous. I have no longer use any type of a cologne or perfume. I only use the mist, and you can refresh your face and spritz the air, spritz the linen. It's an antibiotic and, you know, kills germs. Mm-hmm. So it's fantastic. So thank you for explaining that. Learn something new.
Now, Monique, for you, and does anyone else here make hydrosols? Napa Valley Botanicals, you don't do hydrosols?
I don't make a hydrosol. I make what's called a floral water, and that's basically just adding essential oil to a distilled water.
So it's sort of a similar principle.
So it's similar, but it's not the hydrosol, but it's very similar. And like you say, it's just beautiful to spray on your face. It's very refreshing. It's actually very moisturizing to the skin. And some of these things, like the lavender, is actually a good insect repellent. So it's actually a good thing to have with you as a first aid kit, really. I take mine with me everywhere in my truck. So at any time, you can use lavender hydrosol as a first aid kit, really.
Bee stings respond
really
healing. Well to that.
Yeah, regenerates the cell growth and very good for burns.
Uh-huh. Now, what if we go into sort of that next almost metaphysical level of herbs? I know that Vivian at Mom's Head Garden just seems to embody to me all good things witchcraft. And I mean that in the best possible way. And she would always have the mugwort hydrosol, which stimulates the imagination.
It's one of my favorites.
So I spritz my grandson and say, okay, you're going to go draw really great pictures now.
I bathe in it. I pour it into my bathtub at night.
Really?
And have the most wonderful dreams.
Yeah. So what about that dimension of herbs, including lavender? Can we talk to that at all? I know I have a couple books that I'm always looking up, you know, who's the god or goddess of this particular herb? What do you use on your enemies to make them leave you alone?
Well, and that's what's so exciting about this All Things Herbal benefit is the variety of vendors that we have there and the amount of manifestations that come about as all these herbalists, really, these are healers and shamans that we have that are making these herbal medicines. And I liked what you said about learning from your grandmother. You know, unfortunately, many of us, I did not learn from my grandmother, and many of us didn't have that grandmother that knew herbs. You know, there's almost herbalism was almost a lost art, you know, and thank goodness that some of us brought it back, people like Rosemary Gladstar. But I did go to the California School of Herbal Studies in 93 and 94, and it's interesting, like one of the creams that I make, the basic cream recipe is from Rosemary Gladstar, and it's probably 30 years old. So I just took that base. Some of these recipes are very long-standing. These are long-standing traditions that these people are using to make their medicines, and it's really exciting to see all the different manifestations you know, you'll have one herb, like let's say mugwort, and somebody will make an elixir out of it, and somebody will make a hydrosol out of it, or somebody like me that just dries the herb and puts it in a package and lets you take it home and do what you want with it, or have the plant itself. And that's one of the things that's really exciting about this herb fair, is all the different various manifestations that these herbs take at all these wonderful booths.
Mm-hmm. Peg, I want to bring you in now, because your microphone up and died, so I'm going to get you to share Terry's microphone. And now you focus specifically on the medicinal quality of herbs. Is that right?
That's correct, and Chinese or Asian medicinal herbs as well.
Is it possible to sort of sum up, sort of in general, the theory? I know when I've toured the medicinal herb garden at UC Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I've taken students there before, and they have the cooling herbs and the warming herbs.
Right.
And I find that fascinating. Now, is that a good way to think about Chinese medicine in general, warming and cooling?
It's certainly a good place to start, especially if you bring it into the kitchen. If you were, like, melon. I mean, right now would be a mm-hmm. good time to have some melon. It's fairly warm in here.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a cooling kind of functional food. And then there's also warming foods, of course. They're very good for the winter time, but that's just one very small aspect of it. And there's also another garden that's actually fairly much more close, actually, than UC Berkeley Botanical Garden up in Strawberry Canyon. There's Quarry Hill Botanical Gardens over in Glen Ellen, and it's a Asian woodland, and it's quite nice and has a number of Chinese herbs mixed in with their Asian woodland plants, and some of them, of course, are woodland plants themselves, some of the herbs. Chinese herbs can be, excuse me, anything from, you know, berries to leaves to roots to minerals to animal parts, but usually on the farm, Chinese medicinal farm, medicinal herb farm, we deal primarily with botanicals.
Mm-hmm. And how does your operation work?
Well, it's a farm, and it's partly an experimental farm to see what grows well and what is efficacious here in this country. There, when I first got into it about 11 years ago, I figured, well, what the heck? It's an emerging market, and I'll find the other folks doing it as I go along. Well, surprise! There really weren't many other people doing it. And at this point, there are a few more people getting involved with it. So not only are we doing the experiment part, but we're also a producing farm on a small scale. But I do a lot of education and outreach, and I work with the Medicinal Herb Consortium, of which the Sonoma County Herb Exchange is also a member of that. And their goal is to educate farmers on how to grow medicinal herbs, primarily Chinese medicinal herbs, so that we can have control of Chinese herbs here, so that we can have access to them, so that the governments can't control when they come in, when and where they're stopped at the borders, either in China or here, so that we can also have good quality herbs, and that we can so that we can know what's gone into the quality and care of those herbs. I personally eat organic, and I'd like to know that the herbs that I'm taking are also of good quality.
Mm. Now, are your clients primarily herbal medicine practitioners? Is that who would buy directly from you?
That's some of it. Also, there's a fair amount of medicine makers. Mm-hmm. And there's some progressive pharmacies, Chinese pharmacies, that are interested in what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just as a fun sort of thing, in 2004, the Sonoma County Herb Exchange was part of a $250,000 USDA value-added grant. And that was a pretty big boost to the organization, and that really helped set us up, and that was really quite nice. And as kind of a trickle-down kind of thing from that is I just received a $50,000 grant along with another grower on the East Coast to bring education of Chinese medicinal herbs to farmers in the Southwest as a regional a risk management education grant. So that's kind of fun. So it's kind of getting mushed around. So that's that's quite nice, and it's good to have the influx of money so that the
sure.
education can continue.
Now, when you say risk management, is that to find to have diversity on the farm, to find other things to do?
That's certainly part of it, yes. Uh-huh. It's in the Southwest is experiencing a drought right now, mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other factors in other areas of the country, such as in the West here, we're having a lot of urban expansion, and it's taking over a lot of land. And there are farms are getting squeezed out partly because of the land cost, and there's just a lot of features happening that make it like that. But the risk management in this area would also be to try and keep small farms happening to diversify and bring balance from perhaps our grape-dominated culture here.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. How many of you make cosmetics, work with cosmetic, with body? Okay. Tell me about it.
Oh, making herbal cosmetics?
Yeah, the stuff that goes directly. I mean, I find it of concern that a lot of commercial products have ingredients that are not allowed in Europe.
It's like, a great concern, and I'm glad that it's finally coming out and becoming more mainstream, and you're even seeing commercials on television now where they're greening up the cosmetics and the makeups and the skincare, the lotions and the moisturizers, and talking a little bit more about the ingredients. And because if you think about it, your skin is your largest organ, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so, it just as you want to eat high quality nourishing food, you also want to put high quality nourishing ingredients on your skin. And I just think that a lot of people just didn't know what types of things were going into these cosmetics, mm-hmm. into these creams and lotions, what have you. And so the education is getting out there, and people are becoming more aware, and they are switching and supporting people that are making a more home-based, natural skincare. Mm-hmm. That just has a few ingredients and really no preservatives. Like, for instance, most of my products are made of the same base of beeswax, shea butter, cocoa butter. All these are very emollient, very nourishing, very mm-hmm. moisturizing. And then vitamin E and vitamin C are the preservatives. Now, who wouldn't want to put vitamin E and vitamin C on their skin? And so keeping it simple, and but and the other thing is that these things have to be good. You know, it has to mm-hmm. it has to go on your skin nicely, or you're not going
to
use it.
It has
to gritty. Nobody's going
to,
you know.
It has to feel good.
It has to feel
good.
It has to smell good. It has to do what you want it to do, which is to nourish your skin. So there, it is a little tricky to make these things, mm-hmm. and I've been doing it now for about 8 years, mm-hmm. but I have a lot more to learn. Like you mentioned lotion earlier. Lotion's actually very, extremely hard to make, so I was really intrigued when you said that your grandma made lotion. I was
sure,
like,
it was incredible
really?
Lotion. It was incredible.
Because it's hard to make. It's easier to make a cream or a salve than it is a lotion. So, but yeah, I really appreciate more and more I'm noticing at the markets and at these herb fairs that I do, that more and more people, elderly women especially, are switching over and wanting a more of a natural skincare product.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the other things that's going on in the commercial skin body product line is cost. I mean, my God, some of the prices of just some of the major lines. And then if you start reading some of the books about cosmetics, you find out that, you know, the ascending cost is not indicative of ascending quality. It's more indicative of ascending marketing.
Right.
Well, I agree, because I see in what we do, I grew up in an era where you just bought was at, you know, Long's or, mm-hmm. you know, what was available on the shelf. And mm-hmm. now being involved in direct sales and hearing what people are asking for, again, with what you listed as far as ingredients go, educated me as a salesperson and an educator of our clients that it's extremely important. And I'm a label reader now for the first time ever on what is actually in what I'm putting on my skin and my children's skin, and kind of educating them. West Coast, I think, has always been very much ahead of the rest of the country as far as savvy. I'm learning now from my Midwest customers, you know, they're kind of waking up and smelling the lavender and smelling the organics and smelling the green. And, you know, so they're really ripe to be educated as far as what's good to put on your skin.
Yeah, I think this is a really, really good time. And we'll take a little musical break. And when we come back, let's talk about cooking with lavender and cooking with herbs.
Scarborough Fair, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. Tell her to make me a cup.
parsley, sage, rosemary, and parsley, and
you are listening to Mouthful here on KRCB. I'm Michelle Jordan, and I have a room full of people with me. We have Shelley Urian from Sonoma Lavender, Mary Birkin of Sur La Table in Santa Rosa, also chef for the Sonoma Lavender Festival, Leslie Gardner, director of the Sonoma County Herb Exchange and garden manager for the California School of Herbal Studies, Monique Camp of Sophia's Garden. You are the owner, of course. It's there in Sebastopol. Terry Toso, board member of the Herb Exchange and also Napa Valley Botanicals, Peg Schaefer of a Chinese medicinal herb farm. Did I leave anyone out? Okay. So cooking with lavender and herbs. I think that we've seen some excesses in the use of herbs and lavender in sort of the excitement of the availability of all these things, particularly in the, say, mid-90s, for about a decade, I think we saw some excesses. Too many things on a plate, things not necessarily balanced well. So what do you think it's really important for people to know? Let's start with cooking with lavender.
Well, I think it's important for people to know that moderation is key when it comes to cooking with dried herbs, especially. A little bit more potent when it comes to dried thyme.
Is that because the moisture evaporates and the oils concentrate?
Exactly. And the one thing that I do notice is that when it comes to dried herbs, people have a tendency to overdo it as opposed to fresh herbs. People have a tendency to underdo the fresh herbs.
It should really be the opposite.
It should be the reverse. Uh-huh. Exactly. A lot of times in cooking classes, people will say, well, if I don't have fresh rosemary, can I use dry? And I always tell them, use half the amount for the most part. But, you know, Herbes de Provence has been around forever, and I think about 10 years ago it was definitely overused. I think that's coming back. It's definitely coming back.
I remember when it was a chef who's a friend of mine went to France and was eating in Paris at some very high-end restaurant, I can't remember what, and they had an entire rosemary flower on whatever dish this was. And he said, my God, he said, it tasted like soap. My mouth was filled with soap for the rest of the meal. And it was some of those kind of, there was a combination of that. And I think for me, if you're adding lavender to a food, you need something sweet with it. Otherwise, that aroma, I mean, it does smell like soap because we scent our soaps with lavender. But I think to bring it to the palate and sort of signal that it's floral, a little bit of sugar helps boost that. But at the same time, one of the other excesses that I've seen a lot is olive oils infused with herbs with sugar added. You know, and I didn't want sugar and basil. You know, basil is just such a lovely thing in its own, but I don't really want it to be sweet. I just want that flavor, maybe a little salt to boost its flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. This lavender spice rub that I brought in for you.
Now, what else is in it? Lavender?
Well, it has some dried thyme. Lavender, of course. I have some dried parsley in there. Also, some cumin seed, toasted cumin, toasted coriander.
That's probably
absolutely one of the things that you're smelling. A little bit of sea salt in there as well. Now, I don't have any sugar in it, but you certainly could add sugar to it, or a little bit of brown sugar.
Yeah, just
using
it
as a rub.
Yeah, there's
on
all kinds
meats.
Of sweet things that you can add, and I don't think you'd need to put them in the mixture. I mean, I think that's just one of the things that, you know, experienced cooks sort of, you taste it. Like with fruit vinegars. If you want more flavor of the fruit, you don't add more vinegar, you add a little bit of sugar.
Sure.
So it perks up that fruit flavor
exactly.
on your palate. So what about y'all from the Herb Exchange? Cooking with herbs? Any thoughts? Any indulgences?
Well, you know, obviously the Herb Exchange is was founded to supply local medicine makers. So the original impetus was medicine, not culinary. But in fact, of course, many medicinal herbs are culinary herbs. The reverse is true, of course, too. Oregano and thyme, for example, are two of the most widely researched. Oregano is a fantastic antioxidant, antibacterial, antiviral. thyme, even probably even higher, the thyme oil. Mm-hmm. Many people swear by oregano oil, for example, to ward off colds and flus. And
oh,
so,
really?
So there's a crossover to some mm-hmm. extent. Of course, lavender sage is another example. Mm-hmm. Now, sage from many
years back. I just distilled about 300 pounds of thyme from Sophia's garden, and I got about 16 ounces of oil and then about 10 gallons of hydrosol. And I use that for cooking, but I also use it in the wintertime to ward off flus and bronchial problems.
Did you say sage?
No, I said thyme.
Oh, thyme, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Interesting. So it will serve sort of as an antiviral, antibacterial.
It's mm-hmm. excellent for that.
Mm-hmm. And then when you're cooking with herbs, clearly the ones we've mentioned you'll obviously cook with, are you destroying the medicinal properties as you cook? Are you gaining the benefits when you cook and eat?
You destroy them, yes. Uh-huh. But, you know, that's obviously not the point in cooking.
No, I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think you do, yes.
Because uh-huh. Supposedly, with take garlic as an example, supposedly cooking does not diminish the medicinal properties of garlic.
Yeah.
But it does with some of the herbs. So you really need to do something like distilling.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Michelle, one of the ways that I think is kind of underutilized is using herbs in salads. And I use a lot of raw herbs and chop them up in salads. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things. There's a lot of edible flowers. I even use valerian leaf in salads, just chop it up. There's a lot of medicinal herbs, actually, that taste quite good raw. And so that's one thing if you're concerned about. If you really want to get a medicinal hit from your herbs, but you want to eat them too, salads are a really great way to incorporate them.
We actually do at our lavender festival make a Caesar salad with raw lavender buds on top, which is phenomenal. It just kind of follows with a hint of lavender, and raw lavender aids in your digestive system. It helps with bad breath and toothache. So there's a lot of effects of that, but it was an amazing taste. I would have never believed it until I tried it myself.
Oh, so. It sounds excellent. Yeah.
And, of course, one of the traditionally recognized side effects of using herbs in cooking is the fact that they're great digestives.
I was just going to ask that. You anticipated what I was going to say. So they just aid overall digestion?
Flatulence, digestion. Mm-hmm. You know that? Yes, absolutely. And some of them, for example, promote mother's milk, you know, those sorts of semi-culinary aspects.
Which clover? Which one?
Like dill. Dill.
Really
red clover. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. What are the ones that promote sleep?
Oh, valerian. Many.
Lavender.
Lavender, of course. Lemon balm.
The valerian.
Very balancing.
Chamomile.
Catnip.
Catnip, right.
Yeah. Poppy.
What goes on?
Poppy.
Yeah. California poppy, actually, has a somewhat spicy taste to it and is so mild it can be used for children and yet is a great pain reliever.
Oh, really? California poppy. Now, which part of it?
The whole herb is used.
So that would be
the root, the seed pod is actually quite spicy pod. And interesting in cooking. Yeah, it's just has that little zing to it, but the root and the entire herb is used.
How would you use it to aid in with children? How would you prepare it?
Make a tea, a tincture, or primarily, I think tea and tincture for children. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How you hear a lot about tinctures? What's the basic formula for making a tincture?
Hmm. A tincture is an alcoholic extract. Mm-hmm. So at its most basic, the folk method is to chop the herb and macerate it and infuse it in alcohol for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And by alcohol, what, vodka?
Vodka is a good brandy. 40% alcohol is considered to be the least efficacious percentage is 40%. So brandy, everything from brandy on up to vodka, of course, is preferred because it doesn't have a taste.
Mm-hmm.
At the California School of Herbal Studies, of course, the students make medicines, learn to make medicines, and then are able to purchase a very high extract
mm-hmm.
for use.
And if you're working with children and you don't want so much alcohol in it, if you put it in hot tea, it does sort of evaporate.
Right.
Evaporate.
Right.
Yes. The other thing that's it's helpful to use with people who can't tolerate alcohol or children is glycerin. It's a very good extract.
Oh, glycerin well. Will extract. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
It's very sweet. There's an herb company called Herbs for Kids, in fact, that, that uses glycerin as an extractive. Mm-hmm. And
I think glycerin was one of the. I think glycerin was one of the things that my grandmother used in her hand lotion. I just sort of remember hearing these conversations of ordering glycerin from the pharmacy. Yeah.
And don't forget the bathtub. Kids, you know, they either love to take baths or they hate them. Mm-hmm. But herbs are a great place in the bathtub. Just make like you're making a great big huge cup of tea. And lemon balm, catnip, two of my favorites to help kids unwind at night. They get a little bit jacked up and you want them to wind down. Got a little hyperactivity going on. Mm-hmm. Just make a catnip lemon balm, big old tea bag, and throw it in there and let them play.
It's interesting that catnip is the opposite for kids.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. It's soothing for humans and very stimulating.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, my God, my cats. When they get catnip, there's like 15 seconds of this like spike in activity and the two cats practically kill themselves. And then they just sort of lay there. It's very interesting.
It's so entertaining.
A very close friend of mine went to the School of Herbal Studies in, oh, gosh, quite a long time ago. It was either in the late 80s. I think it was in the late 80s. And she would then come over to my house and make some tinctures and show me how she was making them. And one of the things, when the phase of the moon was important, and she would put them outside, and certain ones you had to make during the waning moon, certain ones during the waxing moon. And with the popularity of biodynamics, which Monique, I know maybe all of you are interested in, but I know Monique, you are, seems to correlate with stuff like that. Am
yes,
I in the
does.
Right track?
Yes. Well, the thing about biodynamics is it it goes even a little bit further. So like the old farmer's almanacs and all that, we were conscious of the moon, the phases of the moon. But with biodynamics, we see the Earth as a whole organism and in conjunction with the cosmos. So there's the principle of as above, so below. It's the old Hermes Trismegistus principle. And we take into account the influences of not just the moon or the sun, but all the planets and all of the zodiacal realms as well. And so there's certain forces that come in when Venus is in Scorpio or when the moon is in Libra. So you want to look for all of these things in terms of working with sort of asking your gophers to go away, for instance.
Oh, God, what's the astrological requirement for that?
That's the secret. You know, there's little secrets in all of this. There's mysteries in nature, you know, where there's times and rhythms that we work with because the gopher's reproductive system is worked with when Venus is in Scorpio. So there's this whole science, which I won't go into right now, but there's tips for all of these things. And you were talking a while ago about skin products and our food, that we all want to have good nutrition and good products on our skin. Well, it's the same thing in biodynamics. We want to have good products for the earth. So we use plants, chamomile, oak bark, valerian, nettle. We use all of these things for the earth, just as we do for our own bodies. And then we work with the rhythms, as I just mentioned. And the underlying situation in the world right now, I believe, is that the future evolution of humanity is at risk if we don't come to a place where the life forces in our food are true and real. They're not manipulated and genetically modified seeds. Also with our herbs, we want our medicine to be real medicine. So that's kind of what's living with the science of biodynamics. Mm-hmm. It's considered a spiritual science.
If somebody wanted a crash course and an initial introduction to biodynamics, what's a good source?
Well, there's lots of good literature, but I have a nonprofit where that is one of
the core reasons for its existence is to help spread interest and sort of biodynamics 101A.
Exactly.
Crash course, yeah. Because it takes will forces to get started, and people get overwhelmed when they read the manual called Agriculture by Rudolf Steiner. It's a bit overwhelming to too much in the head. You want to just get started and
yeah, it sounds
slowly
like when you think
learn.
About it, it's like, well, if I could devote my whole life to this, I could do it.
Yes.
But how do I fit it in
exactly.
in my available
exactly.
time?
One easy handbook is, I don't know the author's name, but it's the book is titled Grasp the Nettle.
That's Peter Proctor.
Yeah.
And then the Demeter.org, wouldn't that be a good source
That's
as well?
That's a good source.
The Demeter Association is the certifying agency for biodynamic growers.
Yeah, there's a Rudolf Steiner College in Sacramento, too.
Now, Monique, when you say you have a nonprofit, is that all under the umbrella of Sophia's Garden?
Well, I have Sophia's Garden, which is a supposedly for-profit. And then I have Sophia's Garden and Healing Arts Center, which is the nonprofit.
Okay, so Sophia's Garden and Healing Arts Center.
Is the nonprofit,
okay.
Yes. And I'd be happy to give anybody information about things. And once again, a plug for the Herb Exchange. When you take on this kind of work with such dedication and hands-on practice, to have a place locally where we can, the farmers can go and bring the harvest and have it all in one spot so we can be a sustainable community where we don't have people driving here and there all over the place, it is such an important thing to have. We just don't have time as farmers to then be able to go out and reach the public with our products.
And there are certainly a lot of competing organizations that do have time to reach the public. So it's one of our constant challenges is, I think, to stay one step ahead of the corporations and big companies that are co-opting the words, as they've done with organic and as they're doing now with sustainable. Mm-hmm. So we really have to continue, like I say, to look to our home base and find people like all of you who are doing things. Let's summarize what's going on. I mean, I could talk to each one of you, I think, for an entire hour. But we've got a book review coming up, so I want to leave time for that. Lavender Festival is taking place the 14th and 15th, Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 4 p.m. in Kenwood. It's $5 per car. There will be a chance to buy all kinds of good things. The lavender massage, I see, seminars, lavender plants, lavender cuisine, Mary, that you're going to be spearheading. Workshops, learn how to make wreaths, probably learn how to make lavender wands. Maybe.
Yeah. That's I've learned a little time consuming.
It is.
Yes. But definitely wreaths.
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful art though. I love watching the making of lavender wands. Where can people go somewhere online to get information?
They can go to sonomalavender.com, and that's LAVENDER.com. At the bottom of our homepage is a link, as well as my email address, which is shelly@sonomalavender.com.
And that's SHELLI.
LLI. And then they can also contact us at 707-523-4411, extension 1 or 2. Susan or myself would be happy to help you.
Okay, let me just repeat that number. It's 523-4411, extension 1 or 2.
And we are taking advance reservations for our culinary cooking classes with Mary from Sur La Table. Again, it is a $20 donation, which does benefit the Valley of the Moon Children's Home. And you get a 40-minute demonstration and tasting of cooking with lavender.
And Mary, you do more than just cook with lavender.
Yes.
You are all. What is your exact position at Sur La Table?
Well, I'm the culinary coordinator.
So if people want
resident chef.
People want information about classes at Sur La Table, and it's a great kitchen. I like that
Thank
kitchen.
You. Thank you very much.
I've taught there a number of times.
Yes, you have.
The last time, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was a zoo, wasn't it?
Me and 30 Jewish guys on a night out.
And you were one of the tallest people there.
I was. And you know, one of the things I didn't factor into the whole situation is when I teach at Sur La Table or anywhere, you know, there's like 4 hours of prep beforehand and three or four assistants. I was on my own.
Yes.
It was crazy.
I noticed.
But they were great guys.
I felt for you.
They were great. They were great guys.
Yeah, they were.
So, surlataube.com, and you type in Santa Rosa in the search bar.
Yes. Well, you just click on store locations.
Yeah.
And then you can go down to Santa Rosa, which is on McGowan. And you can find out what classes are coming up. I'm there about 5 or 6 nights a week teaching classes, mm-hmm. anywhere from 4 to 16 people. We do a lot of private parties.
Yeah, it's a great kitchen. Yeah. I really, really like it a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, Leslie Gardner, thank you so much for you rounded up all the herb people. For information about the Sonoma County Herb Exchange, mm-hmm. where do people go?
The website is www.sonomaherbs.org, sonomaherbs, plural, .org, or calling 707-824-1447.
824-1147.
1447.
1447. And for information about the California School of Herbal Studies, is it still located in Forestville?
It is, in Forestville on Highway 116. Yes, offers a 9-month residential course and a number of weekend courses all about making medicines, learning about herbs, herbal medicine.
And for information?
That's www.cshs.com.
CSHS.com, mm-hmm. for the California School of Herbal Studies. Monique, Sophia's Garden. You have sophiasgardenherbs.com.
That's my website, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, which is just barely up and running. And then my email is monique@sophiasgardenherbs.com. And I can link people on to the nonprofit through that.
Great. And your phone number, 823-2531?
Correct, 707.
That's 823-2531. Napa Valley Botanicals, Terry?
Yeah, I can be reached at 707-664-0768.
664-0768?
Correct.
Okay.
And then I have an email address also, Terry Toso, that's with two R's and an I, terrytoso@hotmail.com. And then for the All Things Herbal, you can reach me directly if you have any questions about the fair at the 707-664-664 number, or also the SonomaHerbs.org website has a link to the
Great.
Fair.
And then finally, Peg Schaefer, ChineseMedicinalHerbFarm.com.
That's it.
Is that how you prefer for people to reach you? Do you want to add a phone number?
That would be the easiest one for me if
okay.
people don't mind.
Sounds great. And on that note, we're going to run out of time for a new review by Laura Hager. See you back here next week on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Before I review Michaela Weissman's new book, God in a Cup, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Coffee, I have a confession. I'm a tea drinker. Though my husband drinks coffee every morning, we do not own a grinder. And while I am not so debased as to buy commodity coffee in vacuum-packed cans, I stand flummoxed before the smorgasbord of coffee choices at my local Whole Foods. Fair trade, sustainably farmed, hand-picked, bird-friendly, Sumatran, Ethiopian, Honduran, Costa Rican. Truth be told, I choose at random. Half the time, thanks to my middle-aged brain, I set the dial to fine grind, carefully position the bag, turn on the machine, and then wander off, never to return. After reading Weissman's sprightly account of the rise of the specialty coffee industry, I will never again treat coffee so lightly. God in a Cup follows the adventures of three globe-trotting entrepreneurs on the cutting edge of the third wave of coffee. The first wave was the industrial commodity coffee of the mid-20th century. The second wave, the quote-unquote gourmet coffee of Starbucks and Peet's. The third wave is made up of elite specialty roasters who are taking coffee connoisseurship to whole new levels, and it must be said, to whole new price points as well. One of the coveted coffees discussed in this book, a Panamanian coffee known as Hacienda La Esmeralda Especial, goes for $130 a pound. That's a pretty precious cup of joe, a cult cabernet of the coffee world. In fact, reading God in a Cup, I was struck over and over again by the similarities between coffee and wine, America's two great legal drugs of choice. In the coffee world, tasting is known as cupping, and until now, it was the preserve of professional coffee buyers. But now high-end roasters like New York's Cafe Grumpy, Chicago's Intelligentsia, and Portland's Stumptown have been offering cuppings for customers, too. Like wine, coffee is scored on a 50 to 100-point scale, with the most coveted coffee scoring in the 90s. And the descriptors of connoisseurs are just as ornate, with cuppers detecting notes of vanilla, honeysuckle, and mango in their coffee. In Portland, which is arguably the new coffee capital of America, some restaurants offer pairing menus matched not to different wines, but to different coffees. One of the differences between wine and coffee is that high-end wine growing has traditionally been the purview of the very wealthy, while the best coffee is often grown by the poorest of the poor in the most beautiful yet wretched places on earth. Ethiopia, where coffee first evolved, Burundi, Indonesia, and the highlands of Central America. The coffee entrepreneurs that Weissman profiles spend much of their time on bone-jarring jeep rides to high, inaccessible places most Western coffee drinkers never see. In contrast to the image of coffee capitalists squeezing poor farmers by paying the lowest price possible, the new coffee entrepreneurs are part connoisseurs, part social revolutionaries, who are actually trying to pay more for great beans. Their challenge is to coax farmers used to growing for the commodity market to grow high-end beans that fetch much more per pound. This means asking farmers to sacrifice quantity for quality. In lands where coffee growing is dictated by a mix of culture, tradition, and desperation, that's a hard sell. Weissman tells the story of both sides of the coffee equation with empathy and erudition, and reports on an international barista competition as well. All this makes for a grand yarn, but more than that, like a good cup of coffee, God in a cup will wake you up. This is Laura Hager for Mouthful.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from KRCB radio members and from the Sebastopol Farmers Market, now open in the downtown Sebastopol Plaza every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with organic, sustainable, locally produced fruits, vegetables, meats, and cheeses, plus breakfast, lunch, and local musicians. Support also comes from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce. Serving brunch Saturday and Sunday, Peter Lowell's Cafe online at peterlowells.com. Support also comes from NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86-NETBOOKS. Listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.